Good morning. This is Breck Plumbo with DistressPro.com, and thanks for being on the line today. Today, I've got Greg Trotter of Commercial Building Consultants. He's based in Orlando, Florida. He's been out there working with lenders and developers for more than 10 years. And the reason I have him on the phone today is because I've been getting a lot of requests from members for information on receivership and on property preservation. So Greg's been in that business for more than 10 years. He's doing deals all over the country. And so we're psyched to have him on the phone. And so without further ado, Greg, welcome. How you doing?
Really good, thanks. Thanks for calling. This is an issue in an area that's really near and dear to my heart, and fully enjoy this area of the industry is asset management and asset preservation.
Yeah.
And I started 31 years ago in commercial construction, and I found that the last 10 years have been really either monitoring assets, preserving assets, or turning around properties and projects for various lenders and developers. And it's a lot of fun. We say it around here is that we get paid to eat ice cream.
Yeah.
And so everything is getting better in Orlando, and that's the report this morning.
Well, that's good. So 31 years, that means you were, you came through our, sort of our first major real estate crunch in the late 80s and 90s. Tell me a little bit about what you were doing then and maybe a little bit about how today differs, or is it the same?
Sure. I think that I have a real interesting perspective because I got out of school in 78 and I was out there during the 1980 to 1982 financial distress. You're in one of the areas of the country that were really hit hard. That'd be that New England, Northern New York area,
sure,
as well as parts of the Midwest. And since I was in construction and development, the only thing available to do at that point in time, the only projects you could really work on was government projects where there was a subsidized housing, elderly housing, medium income housing. But basically what it was the only thing coming out of the ground during that period, the only thing to get any money was subsidized housing projects. And so that's all I was doing then was this multifamily product. And so I got to become really comfortable and familiar with it back then. And then fortunately we kind of climbed out of it in 1982. And then what happens from there is you go to student housing, and then you go to industrial and commercial and office, and you go through these various cycles in the construction industry, and you follow them, and you all of a sudden become an expert in all areas. And here we are today in another crunch.
Right.
As far as how they compare,
yeah.
Back then, for me, it doesn't differ a whole lot. But believe me, the changes that have occurred between the 1980 to 82 and where we are now, this one is much more pervasive. This is a huge financial collapse in the country and worldwide, and it's affected everybody. I mean, I don't care if you're an airline, you're a retailer, you're a publisher, you're a jail bondsman. Your business is down.
Right.
Funny enough, but I'm talking everybody has been affected by this change in market, and it's staggering because before, in the 80-82, it was developers, real estate, banks, some high tech. There was some weaknesses in some other market parts of the sectors of the economy, but it wasn't everybody like it is in this one.
Right.
And so this is a biggie. This is the worst I've ever seen.
Right. Well, I'm hearing that a lot.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what you're doing during the run-up, just until, you know, sort of late 90s or, you know, 2000 through, you know, I guess 2007 or 8, or sort of when we peaked and we realized we were in the crunch. What were you doing then?
Well, this is the great thing, is that as a result of the problems in the 80 to 82, what did we learn? We learned that projects were getting funded that in fact weren't happening. Literally, pieces of land were sitting there, and banks were getting applications for payment for projects being built where they weren't being built.
Hmm.
What happened as a result of that is my job was created. Now, first of all, I went through that crunch and I was really hurt hard between the 1980 and the 82 crunch and then the 1990 crunch, I mean, I was wiped out. And I think if you live that, you really appreciate your job when it's created as a result of that.
Sure.
So my job, day in, day out, for, say, 1999 through, say, 2007, was doing due diligence. And what is that? That means that if you're buying a dealership, a apartment, a hotel, a restaurant, a apartment complex, or a whole portfolio of them, you need to evaluate all the physical aspects of the property. That means the roof, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, site drainage, parking, lighting, that sort of thing.
Right.
And the lender needs that. And by the way, the owner, the ultimate owner, needs to know what's going on. And he needs a capital planning budget of what he needs to do for the next 12 years during the term of the loan. We do that all day long. So we would do what we call property condition assessments. Along with that, you do an environmental site assessment to make sure there's no issues with the property from nearby gas stations, that sort of thing.
Sure, 21E.
And then, I'm sorry?
21E type of studies?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we've, you know, hundreds each year. Along with that, what happens is that we also do a lot of bank draws where we're monitoring construction as it's either something that's getting renovated or building ground up. And all of a sudden, we're this huge data cruncher of knowing what the prices of everything that's going on. We're talking to various, you know, part sectors of the industry because we're sitting on the site talking to owners, buyers, contractors, developers, and we're doing this all around the country.
Okay.
Why would we do it all around the country is that eventually lenders really, if they really want to know the hard truth on what's going on with the project and that there isn't going to be an issue with it going to permanent financing, they want someone there who cares, picks up the little nuances. Is there an issue? Isn't there an issue? Is this thing going to be a successful project? Is it going to make money? And we're the eyes and ears for the lenders out in the field.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful job because you get to be in the trades, go figure out what's going on, and you have great cost data of what's going on month to month to month on all division six, 16 divisions of construction.
Huh.
So
that brings you up to the credit crunch. And as we know, there's lots of changes have happened, you know, since then, just in terms of who's able to get money for what. And so what's changed for you, or what are you doing different in your business now? Or what are people asking you to do differently than you were doing before?
Well, it's really dramatically changed. I mean, we're talking people just shaking their heads and wondering if their phone works. Well, going back to the, there's even defaults in good times.
Mm.
Okay, there's going to be problems with various assets that lenders have, and since we were on the field, our boots were on the ground. We would go in and work out various projects for lenders who the developer got put in prison or left the project or just didn't get it or had a problem with the contractor. So we do various workout situations where we would just get everybody to hold hands together. We would go into projects that literally, one that's famous here in Orlando, where the project just sort of sat there in the iDrive area, and it was really quite an eyesore, half completed. And we basically were assigned to take care of that project for a lender out in New York as it goes through bankruptcy and so forth. And it's kind of a fun story is that lenders usually don't end up on the positive when a property goes to REO.
Right.
But all said and done, because of the market, because it's a different era than right now, the lender gets all its fees, gets money, full proceeds back, and ends up totally whole, including all fees from legal fees, interest fees, late interest fees, on and on. And needless to say, that helped my career because that was in 99, 2000. And for a lender to end up whole on a project that went to REO pretty means that they thought, I walked on water.
Yeah, right.
From there, you have one success that leads to another, leads to another, leads to another.
Sure.
And so it was a lot of fun to sort of put the various due diligence we were doing, the bank draw work we were doing, and helping lenders, developers through problem times in their project in the good times.
Right.
What happened then is when the brakes got hit, and I'm going to say around August of 2007,
yeah,
was when it was really obvious to us.
Yeah.
We were going into full bore REO work. Give you an example of one project where my wife and I packed up the house and moved onto a project in South Florida because the lenders didn't have any confidence with regards to what the developer was going to do. So there was a forbearance agreement signed, and the keys were turned over to me, and the lenders wanted the thing completed. And so we lived on the project and completed it.
Wow. That's
it was
funny.
A lot of fun.
That's funny.
It was right in the middle of Biscayne Bay, and it was a tough assignment, but someone had to do it.
Well, that is a great segue. I'm sorry. I was just saying that is a good segue for what I wanted to talk about is a little bit about the mechanics of receivership. And I know you're probably not always getting moved into a project.
No.
But sort of what happens from, you know, at what point does the asset manager say, all right, I got to get Greg on the phone. And then after they just make that decision, kind of walk us through what happens, you know, what's involved, what's the goal, you know, what's a typical assignment look like?
Well, the good news is they all vary. They really do. And what happens is that an asset manager sees a problem loan and he's monitoring it, and then all of a sudden it goes to, it looks like that the developer is not going to pay anymore, mm-hmm. has left town,
sure.
whatever it is. He gets some sort of idea that he's stuck with this property.
Yeah.
What happens with that file is then it's looked over, and quite honestly what we see is a lot of these folks that are stuck with this situation have had no experience with REO. They're moved from another part of the bank, underwriting, you know, where the loan maybe originated. They have no clue of what's going on or how to really approach this. And they have so many of these files that they actually have. I have asset managers that excuse themselves for all the boxes in their office, not files, but boxes of files
right.
of REO situations.
Wow.
So they're really overcome, and they want to know sort of what's out there and what do they have. And that's the puzzle you get to solve, is that, okay, where do we really sit with the contractor, with liens, with the authorities having jurisdiction, meaning the building department, the housing department, whomever, and what do we have to do to right this ship? What is the cost to complete? What were the problems? Why did they stop? Was it a problem with unforeseen conditions, or was it simply they ran out of money? A lot of times, it's not that project that's the problem. It was another project that really sucked the life out of the developer and/or lender or whatever, and tipped the boat over, if you will.
Right.
So, we offer that sort of soft sell service where the lender, our clients, drive the bus, meaning they can call up and just say, "What do we got at such and such an address?" Or, you know, they can go fully engage, where it's their lawyer. Puts us as a court-appointed receiver, and what that would mean is that you go in front of a judge and say, "This, Mr. Judge, this particular individual has a loan on such and such a property, has obviously left the property to, you know, defaulted for the last 12 to 24 months on this loan, and is just sitting there, wasted property. It is an issue with crime, with safety, blah blah blah." And what happens is the judge either agrees or doesn't agree with it, but typically they do when it gets to that point.
Yeah.
And then CBC, Commercial Building Consultants, is listed as the court-appointed receiver.
Yeah.
And our responsibility is to make safe, make sure that no one jumps in the pool, walks off the pier, if you will, gets analyzes the building itself and sees what needs it has to make sure it's preserved. And sometimes, in some cases, you know, when we do a cost to complete on an asset, it looks like, hey, you're a kiss away from getting this thing completed, and then you have a much more valuable asset with, you know, XYZ amount of input from the bank as far as proceeds that you were going to have set aside for this loan anyways. We can get the building stabilized and up and running, and maybe you can sell it, lease it, whatever. So we work as consultants. So what our job is to take care of the bank, to preserve or maybe even improve the asset and help them out. And, you know, they're, I sit across from these folks all day long, and they just look at me and say, you know, I have 10 more files on my desk yesterday than I did today.
Right.
I mean, today than yesterday. And, you know, I'm a little overcome here, and I don't have a lot of road time to go around and check all this. So there's more and more of a demand for this as time goes on.
Right. So it sounds like most of the time then you'd be engaged pre-foreclosure. I know, at least in my neck of the woods, what typically happens when commercial property is in default is that as the lender moves to foreclose, there's a bankruptcy filing, you know, a large percentage of the time, I don't know, 70-80% of the time. The debtor will file Chapter 11. I should say the owner will file Chapter 11. Is that the time frame when you get called in?
Well, it all works with the loan documents.
Mm-hmm.
When you sign a loan for as a developer for owning a property or developing a property, there's a number of kicks in there that all of a sudden put you in default.
Sure.
Whether it's you know, not paying on time, not reporting on time, not giving the information as far as what your rent rolls are,
yeah,
your revenue. There's a number of ways that you can get into default. And depending on how aggressive and how the market is, the bank will either sit back and ignore problems, like what's happening right now,
right,
and or in the good days, they just pull the plug and say, all right, Mr. Developer, you're in default, and we're taking the property back, and we're going to fix it. So it all, you know, is dependent on the market and the situation and really the experience of the asset manager themselves and
right,
who's standing above them with a directive. And that would be also the Fed.
Right. But it sounds
sometimes
like
the FDIC is the one that drives the bus.
Right. It sounds like you're called in fairly early, though. As soon as the property's in and at some level of default, they want you to get a handle on kind of what's going on over there. Is that accurate?
That's the best way. To be honest with you, that's not the accurate. No, that's not accurate at all.
Oh.
It's one of those things that if you called us last week, baby, you know, you'd be in a lot better shape than you are this week.
Yeah.
And it's so true.
Sure.
Because, I mean, let's go back to the scenario of the two-year scenario.
Yeah.
Let's say if that, and we're talking a large bank that everybody knows, certainly a large regional bank, had been holding onto a property and not pulling us in maybe a year late. They could have easily done this a long time ago when the market was better. There was more interest in risk, taking a risk. There was more equity out there to play with. Therefore, they could have cleaned their slate of this particular asset, but they didn't want to acknowledge it. They didn't want to say that this is a non-performing loan because it affects their operation. And so, you know, it's hard to be in their position right now. One of the worst things in the world as far as a job to do, got to be a banker.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
They have to acknowledge they have an issue and then work with it, and they have to expend some money into it. And that's difficult when you have a lot of defaulted loans.
Yeah. So what you're seeing now are, and I'm hearing this from a lot of folks still, is lenders delaying the pain.
Oh, absolutely. We have properties that they haven't seen payments on for a long time. These are operational properties, let's say multifamily or hotels or
yeah,
restaurants or whatever, and they have not seen any revenue come from that loan for a year or two or whatever.
Yeah,
and they're allowing the borrower to sit there and operate that property and pay the utilities and keep it going because that means that they don't have to expend all that effort. Really, the best person to take care of that property is the one that, you know, has been operating it. So
yeah,
right now they're kind of kicking the can down the road and sort of going, okay, we're going to kind of ignore that because we have a lot of other problems right now. And at least that property is hot, warm, operational. It's moving along. We're not going to deal with him till later and see what happens.
Right.
And that's the big question is what is going to happen?
Wow. Well, one of the questions that I had from a member, without getting too specific, I don't want to get into rates and amounts or anything like that, but How do you charge for your services? Is it a retainer type of a thing, or is it based on the? I guess just tell us a little bit about how you figure your structure.
Sure. Really, all we have is time. That's what we do. Is we look at the time we're going to be involved with the property. You know, there's a lot of risk. You know, we will possibly hire fence people, roof people, on up to full-blown total renovation of a property. So we know that there would be a cost to complete if that's required. We also look at our time and effort that we're going to put into the property and sort of give them an idea of budget. Getting a retainer is a really good idea, and I wouldn't have said that a year ago or 2 years ago, but what happens is that we get to an assignment, and like some people have said to me, Greg, it's like the cavalry has come. You can imagine a property kind of sitting foul for a year or two, and all of a sudden, you know, zip, zip, trucks, fences, ladders, all sorts of things happening on a property, and they go, my God, it's like overnight this thing is going crazy, and they're usually, the neighbors are really happy to see some activity on a property.
Yeah.
And then we've found that if we don't get a retainer, some cases we're not getting paid for 120 or more days later.
Wow.
So I have all the risk. I have all this money going out, and then you would think a bank could cut you a check for what you're doing to cover their risk. And it turns out, and this is a heads up for anybody doing this, is how are you going to get paid, and is it going to be on a timely basis?
Right.
Because watch this. This is it. Let's say I have one property where a boat sank off in a canal right in front of the property. It was tied up to the dock. Well, who are they going to call? They're going to call the court-appointed receiver.
Right.
And what's my liability? Well, that boat that someone arbitrarily decided to hook to this dock could be up to $10,000 a day.
Wow.
For environmental issues. So
wow.
I'm looking at a lot of liability.
Right.
And, you know, for the bank not to take care of me, because I'm taking care of them, is rather odd. But you really need to figure out, and you could be in front of a senior vice president, and he's engaging you to be a receiver, but he has several layers above him that are dealing with a lot of problems, issues, and controlling the purse strings, and where you think you're dealing with a guy that can authorize a check. In this case, all bets are off. It is 2009, 2010 now.
Yeah.
New deal. He can't cut the check. So you need assurances you're going to get paid.
Wow. And so you mentioned a senior vice president there. Let me just ask you a little bit about that. When you're working with, first off, what type of lenders or banks are you working with mostly? Are they local or national? Or kind of give me the landscape there.
Locally, we're probably working with three lenders that are everyone's familiar with in the Orlando area.
Yeah.
Some large regional banks, we're working with a few of those. And a lot of our stuff is to do with private banking. Private banking is where it's not a conventional loan.
Sure.
Private money, if you will, is put up to do a project, so that's a higher interest rate and usually a higher risk. So what's going to be a problem child in a market like this would be the private banking area.
Yeah.
So and quite honestly, they're more interesting. They're not a 7-Eleven coming out of the ground.
Right.
They're a multifamily with a renovation component and a this and a that.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of workouts in the private banking arena, day in, day out. But it's probably 80% private banking, and then 20% just conventional, either local or regional banks.
Okay. And so what is a typical title for somebody who's your decision-making contact at a local or regional bank?
Special assets, servicer, that sort of thing. Usually it's a special asset manager is the guy you want to talk to, is the guy that you want to get in front of, guy or gal. There's what I've found is, and it's interesting, is that these, there could be four people in an office in a special asset management office, and they're just getting deluged with files and boxes of files, and they don't even know how to come up for air.
Yeah.
And so they do need help. They have not acknowledged in some cases or got the authorization to get the help.
Yeah.
But they're the one you want to make the relationship with.
Right. So would you say that there's a particular asset type that you is your focus or specialty?
Well, you know, there clearly is that, and it's really sometimes the most difficult, and that's multifamily.
Mm-hmm.
Through my entire career, you'd like to think that you're going to move on to different asset types, but, you know, I've worked on banks, I've worked on a lot of car dealerships, I've done a lot of hotels, but year in, year out, the multitudes of multifamily work we do is just incredible. And
yeah.
Up to and including, there's one project we did, which was a portfolio of worth $1.2 billion, and it was basically 297 different apartment communities between Orlando to Michigan. And it's hard actually not to drive down the street and run into one.
Yeah.
That we, you know, a NAPRA portfolio. So
wow.
It's multifamily, multifamily, multifamily. And then, you know, like last week I worked on, no, this week I worked on an aircraft hangar.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, you're working on a retail building and then back to multifamily. So
yeah.
It's predominantly apartments. People have to live somewhere.
So what do you see as sort of the biggest challenge facing, I guess, two groups? One is the multifamily investor, and then second would be, lenders on multifamilies. What are they facing today?
Well, there was a great article. I'm not sure if you saw it. We have the Orlando Business Journal here in Orlando
mm-hmm.
that is predominantly focused on commercial real estate. And then you look around and you look at the various other ones. And there's a Nashville Business Journal that came out yesterday with a great article by Eric Snyder. And the heading is, Analysts Tell Developers to Play Golf in 2010. Now, that kind of says it all. I mean, and you laugh, but I know people that are literally doing that, where
yeah.
they have had a great experience mode. They should be getting money, but there's no money out there from conventional lending. So people are literally packing up and coming to Florida for extended long-term winter to spring vacation, and
wow.
I know that for a fact. I'm
huh.
sitting right here. So what is happening is there's no money out there whatsoever to do anything except for multifamily,
hmm.
Fannie, Freddie, HUD, FHA-type situations, and
yeah.
that's the only money out there, period.
Yeah.
So if you're focusing on developing, the only thing you can do is multifamily.
Right.
You cannot buy retail. You can't buy a car dealership unless you have money. Cash.
Right.
That's what's ironic about this situation. If you have cash, you can buy a property for, you know, 50%, 40% of the actual cost of duplicating that property.
Yeah.
I mean, there's huge opportunities out there. I would encourage anyone who has cash to get in the market, and you have a lot of power.
Right. And so what would you say to the bank's special assets groups who are sitting here looking at defaulting multifamilies or stuff in their portfolio now, or, you know, OREO?
Well, I can tell you there's a property right down the street, 480 units. It was like a B property, if you will.
Yeah.
It had 32 offers. That was in October. 32
mm.
offers of which... So you're talking about a $30 million project,
mm.
and it had 32 offers, call it 22 legitimate offers.
Mm.
There's a lot of demand out there for people to buy multifamily.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have one that is, you know, somehow, I've been to projects in the last 4 weeks that have had 62% occupancy in an apartment complex.
Mm.
That's not going to work. You're not going to cut it. So there's opportunities there to turn around an asset like that by getting good marketing, good property management, get that thing up to so where it can show some revenue, and then you definitely could market that. And there's an appetite out there for ground up, and there's an appetite there for purchasing existing operating multifamily projects.
Right. So move fast, get the property into saleable condition, and then listen to the market, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of analysis goes into that. I mean, this particular location we're talking about is a really interesting submarket. There's a school nearby that is in a huge growth mode. You know, you look at each one individually, and if you're looking at any property for a loan, however you're going to get the money, the key thing right now is revenue. What is the revenue being thrown off by that property? What are your expenses? what's the income? Can you pay the loan?
Mm.
And, you know, people, like you said, they need to live somewhere. And there's some areas that are really tough to fill apartment complex, but there's a lot of great ones too.
Yeah.
You know, so there is clearly opportunity out there.
Right. So if you could use your crystal ball and just tell us what you see, you know, kind of 12 or 24 months from now, or if not then, you know, when do you see a return to positive movement, or what, you know, just tell us what you see.
Well, we're in positive movement right now. I mean, let's look at the residential side. We have a lot more activity this year than last year. We have a residential component within our firm,
mm-hmm.
and we've seen 30% increase in volume this year than last year.
Wow.
So you kind of look at the residential market and say, what's going to happen to the commercial market? It's exactly the same thing. We're going to see in 2010 a lot more pressure from FDIC for lenders to dump property.
Yeah.
There's a huge amount of equity on the sidelines that's going to come in and sweep some of this stuff up,
yeah.
because they understand that the opportunity is now. And then, so we're going to have some bank failures next year. We're going to have a lot of consolidation. We're going to have a real, you know, great headline breaking news about this, that, and the other thing that are all great to sell papers as far as failures. And then we're going to come out the other side, and I'd say that probably in 24 months, we're going to be ramping up and it'll be, you know, pretty much back to normal. Right now, everybody is really confused as to what our administration is going to do with taxes, with anything, with small business, and what I see and what I saw is that everyone in the lending area and development area was frozen for several months, or maybe even a year, where they couldn't do anything because they really didn't know where anything was going after that financial collapse.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing clearly, and I'd peg it at November 2009, we started to see a turnaround where, you know, everyone's more accepting of the market, more accepting of the situation, and we got to move on.
Yeah.
Demands for businesses such as medical supply, medical labs, things that are moving along, they're purchasing buildings, they're starting to invest, and it's going to go through very industry sectors to get back to where, you know, we're all comfortable again. And you got to remember, and that's one thing I can tell from my experiences, is that when you're in the good times, you figure they're never going to end.
Sure.
When you're in the bad times, like we're in right now, you never see that there's going to be any light at the end of this tunnel. Trust me.
Yeah.
It's going to turn around.
Yeah.
And it always does, and that's one of the greatest things about the U.S. of A, is that this is a capital economy. We're driven to expand, to innovate, and if we lose that, that's a sad thing, but I don't see that. I think that we're going to be fine in 24, 28 months.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I like that forecast. So, who are you looking to work with or network with out there? Who would you like to hear from or who could be hearing from you?
Well, we do really well with people who, you know, they get it. They're lenders who see opportunity in taking care of their properties, improving their assets or stabilizing them.
Yeah.
People who want creative decisions and direction, and if they want us to grab hold of a property and steer it in the right direction. So it would be special asset managers.
Yeah.
It would be developers that are having a little bit of a problem with the property. We're problem solvers. We're a little boutique firm, but we have huge resources. Anyone that can do 298 apartment complexes in two months for a purchase can certainly get their hands around whatever, you know, you throw at us.
Right.
And we've had well over a decade of experience doing it. So I just went to Mobile, Alabama to see a developer, and he needs money. He needs equity for some really sweet, fantastic projects, which are multifamily, HUD-backed,
yep.
private lender. I mean, Wells Fargo is ready to do the construction financing, ready to do the permanent financing. REITs line up to buy this sort of stuff. He just needs an infusion of equity. You know, we're kind of stepping outside of our box here and looking at opportunities like that to help people out to get through this, meet more people that, you know, that are really interesting, challenging. We do really well with tough clients.
Yeah,
but
plenty of that out there today.
Right. Anybody who's really, really interested in solving a problem, they should call us, and we'll come up with some solutions.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the call today. Anybody with a ton of problems, call Greg Trotter of Commercial Building Consultants, based in Orlando, Florida. It was really great having you here. I hope that we answered a lot of questions for folks who are wondering, you know, what is receivership and what do I do next? And look forward to some more of this, and look forward to talking to you again, Greg.
That's appreciated, and enjoyed talking to you. Our phone number here in Orlando is 407-447-5881, and you can go to our website, commercialbuildingconsultants.com.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Greg.
Have a great day.